Okay. Thank you. I give the floor to Hans Hogevorst for the report of the ISB chair.
Thank you, Michel. Setting standards is nice, and getting them adopted around the world is even sweeter. And I have some good news to tell you in that respect. I was in Singapore in June for a conference, and there the local standard setter announced that Singapore was going to be a full adopter of IFRS in 2018. Singapore is a very important economy in the region and especially within ASEAN, and I hope this will have a reflection on other countries such as Indonesia, which is on the way, Vietnam, which is not even, has not even started, but we are trying to get their interest as well. This week we heard very positive signals from the new government in India that they want to make progress in adoption of IFRS. And Ian McIntosh will be hopefully shortly visiting India to talk with officials. And we will keep very close ties with India in the near future. The Japanese government 2 weeks ago produced a report on the third arrow policies of Prime Minister Abe, which are all structural reforms. And that report reconfirmed the Japanese commitment to the goal of a single set of high-quality accounting standards, and they specifically referred to the mandate of the G20 back in 2008. And they also said they were going to further promote the use, the voluntary use of IFRS. And one of the topics that they are going to address is that the Japanese FSA, the Japanese Securities Regulator, is going to write a report summarizing the early adopters' experience in Japan with how they experienced the adoption of IFRS. And from the signals that we have been picking up in our visits to Japan, I have absolutely no doubt that this will be a very positive report and that that might encourage a further increase of voluntary use of IFRS in Japan. On the standard setting activities, as you know, the wheels of standard setting grind slowly, so I have no spectacular news for you today, except that we continue to be finished with revenue recognition. We are now putting the last dots on the I of IFRS 9, and we expect to publish that at the end of this month, and we'll give it a lot of publicity and to make sure that it gets the attention that it deserves. And we were indeed very happy with the reference that President Mario Draghi gave to the need to adopt IFRS 9 yesterday. We do a lot of work on promoting consistent application. Michel, you referred to the protocol that we have closed with IOSCO. In June, there was a meeting of senior staff and three board meetings in Tokyo in our AOSSG office with IOSCO Committee 1 to discuss matters in support of consistent application. And there was also a specific meeting organized by the Asia-Oceania office to talk to securities regulators and members of the AOSSG in the region. To ensure proper application of the revenue recognition, we have formed the Joint Transition Resource Group on RevReg, which will be jointly chaired by Ian McIntosh and the Vice Chairman of the FESB, Jim Croker, and they will very soon start their work. And we have decided to do The same for one particular aspect of IFRS 9, not for the whole standard, but for the impairment part of it. The impairment model is an expected loss model. It is very much based on judgment. So there is in itself considerable scope for variety in practice. And that's why, or there is a potential for variety in practice. And that's why we felt it was important to assist the market participants in implementing this new standard. And we will have banks participating, and also very importantly, we will have regulators participating in this group. It will not be a joint group with the FSB because we don't have a converged standard. And the FSB has not finished its standard yet, so it will be an IFRS-only group. But again, this is all rather new for us, to have these resource groups helping the markets implement a new standard. It's also an interesting experience for us if it works well or not. We'll have to see. We have done a lot of work on the conceptual framework. As you know, we have a very ambitious timetable. Thus far, we have been able to stick to it. We have started our redeliberations in the recent months, and we have already decided on some modest modifications to the existing chapters 1 and 3. We have made a decision on stewardship that had never been completely removed from our conceptual framework, but it had a sort of a submerged position, was not quite clear, and as a result, people thought that we didn't think it was an important principle anymore, whereas stewardship or accountability is, of course, the very essence of financial reporting. So we will give it a more prominent and explicit status in the chapter on the purpose of financial reporting, and I really think that's a big improvement, taking away ambiguity. We have also decided, at least tentatively, because it's going to be an exposure draft, so there will be another round of discussion, but we have decided to reinstate prudence in the sense of caution, the exercise of caution in the face of uncertainty. It will be explicitly introduced not as a alternative for neutrality, but as a support for neutrality. Neutrality remains our goal. The board does not want to compromise on that. We don't want an explicit or systemic bias towards conservatism in accounting, since conservatism may sound cautious and prudent in the beginning, but it always ends up with hidden reserves that are then being released in times when the company is not doing so well. So it always, this excessive prudence or conservatism always ends up in imprudence, and that's what we want to avoid. So prudence as a support for neutrality. And in a future discussion, we will also be looking to the question whether we would like to introduce prudence in one of our standards, in IAS 1, which is a general standard which tells preparers how they should go about their financial reporting more in general. And we feel that where the conceptual framework is does not have the direct impact of a standard, that it might be a good thing to do to introduce that in IAS 1. The board has not discussed it yet, so I don't know how the board is going to decide. We'll have to see. I also have the feeling that our efforts are being appreciated by those groups of investors who had concerns about these issues of stewardship and prudence, and I think really feel that they feel that they are being listened to, even if we don't in many cases cannot give them everything they want. We continue to work at a very high speed at the conceptual framework without being hasty, but in the July meeting of the board we will have another 10 papers or so coming up on important issues for the conceptual framework. Leases, we have taken already a great many decisions. Members of ASEF have requested if some of those issues could be brought back to the ASEF meeting in September. We will be very happy to do so. We want people to have ample time to think about all the issues, and if they have new insights, we are always willing to look at that. I believe that that's going to be an important meeting. Obviously, if people do have alternative views, they should express so very clearly, and not just disagree, but also give clear alternative views. In terms of insurance, by far the most important project that we have left, given the size of the industry, given the economic impact of the industry, and given the rather disgraceful situation that we don't have a proper standard for this industry, which causes tremendous feelings of insecurity among investors. We have one big question left, which is what to do with participating contracts. These are contracts in which the insurance company invests part of the premiums, or more like deposits that they receive from their clients, usually in the context of life insurance. The practice is that most of the proceeds go back to the client, but often on a discretionary basis. It's quite remarkable contracts. Sometimes, and many times, the insurance company will keep part of the profits to itself. The question is how to treat that. Our inclination is to treat those own profits, own shares of these investments, just like any other financial instrument, because that's basically what they are. Many insurers want to lump it together with the other cash flows in insurance contracts, which we are not sure is the right solution. We receive many conflicting messages from the industry, which is caused by the fact that there are so many different business models around. The only around the world, not just outside Europe, Europe compared to the rest of the world, but also within Europe, many different business models. The common thread in many of the proposals is that, and in that respect, the insurance industry is no different from many other industries, that they would like to park most sources of income volatility as much as possible outside profit or loss. I remember we recently had a meeting, and we heard a lot of these proposals how to do so. And at the end of the meeting, I asked the participants, "So if we do everything that you want, what is it that could possibly unsmooth your earnings?" And the answer was a big storm. I don't mean to be flippant about this, because these are very serious issues, and we talk very seriously with the industry. There is a very constructive relationship. I think the industry also realizes that we cannot do possibly everything what people want, because there are so many different variables in the discussion. What we aim to do in the next couple of months is to narrow down the variables that we are going to decide about. We hope to take the final big decisions in September, October. I think that sums up my contribution to this meeting.
Thank you, Hans. Questions to Hans on this report? Yes, Bob.
Hans, on leasing, it's clearly this is a very divisive issue. And it's divisive among preparers who have different views and between the FASB and the IASB, which now has different views, as I understand it. And you will clearly make the decision you conclude is the correct decision. There will be inevitable disappointments when you make that decision. And I hope, and those who are disappointed will quite naturally claim that they weren't listened to. I hope you will do all you can to make clear in every way that you have listened completely, that in the end you make what you believe is the best decision, but it's not because you haven't listened and they haven't been heard.
Yes, well, we feel, we are convinced that we listened quite carefully and to many people and many organizations. And there are many views around. Generally, we can say that there is a tremendous support among the investor community. There is much less support under the preparer community, although there are quite a few preparers who see this as an inevitable development. We also discovered recently there are quite a few preparers, especially the ones that are heavy users of leases, that already provide their own adjustments to their financial statements that show the impact that leases have on the balance sheet. So those are much, they may not be wildly enthusiastic, but they would accept it as a fact. But I told you, even though we have already made all the important decisions, that in ASEF we will create an opportunity to have a further round of discussions. We're always happy to listen and take arguments very seriously. At the end of the day, of course, we have to come to a decision. This has taken very long. People are getting fed up, so we have to bring this to a conclusion. Even on last week, we had a very good discussion with the Japanese lease organization, in which I think we mutually still gave each other some new information. So it never stops. Well, it will stop, but until the very end, we keep on listening.
Other questions? No questions. Then we move to the next item.